Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Oh, my baby slept through the night at 6 weeks.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
These toys are not going to mess up themselves.
With Margaret Aples
and Amy Wilson.
I will never, ever do this again. This is horrible.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
Does not compute.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Amy.
And this is Margaret. And this week we are talking about toddlers, the great equalizer.
They are.
They are.
Are they not? My babies, let me think about this. My first newborn was like a nightmare newborn. So I was already brought pretty low. But you may have been, you're one of those like, oh, my baby slept through the night at 6 weeks. So was it toddlerhood that brought you low?
Toddlerhood. So I have, my kids are all 18 months apart. So I had at one point like a three-year-old, a two-year-old, and a newborn. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I recently was in Los Angeles where I raised those children, and I drove by the house like thinking like, oh, warm memories of my old house. And I drove up and we lived in this tiny house. It was 900 square feet, five of us. And then at some point, my sister was staying with us in this like little back house garage apartment. And so there were six of us. And I went back to be like, oh, the memories. And I literally pulled up and I was shaking. I had like total stress, overwhelming memories. Like there was so little joy in it. Like I was surprised by my reaction, like looking in that little living room window, like this front room that was the only like really functional room in the house. And I was just like, no, don't make me. It was like visiting Shawshank.
I'm picturing it like this, like little house in the woods, like Hansel and Gretel's like witch cottage, like that, just where terrible things happened.
It was like that, but in the middle of downtown LA. And like, so there were also like a million screaming teenagers because we lived across from a high school and people like doing drug deals in the alley. It was horrible, horrible. Like, I cannot believe how stressed I was looking at this house.
Right. Like, that was me.
And so for a lot of us, if you're like Amy and I, you are on the very far side of this experience. My youngest is now seven. So let's say, well, I guess I'm 3 years out because I count from 3 to 4 still as a toddler.
Sure.
And so we're going to be reminiscing for those of us who have survived these days. And we're going to be advising for those of you going into these days.
You know, I like to use, we have a guest today. Clint Edwards is the author of the new book, Silence is a Scary Sound, and other stories on living through the terrible twos and threes. So he's sort of an expert in this area of life. And he says that the toddlerhood ends when your kids are old enough to get up in the morning and like get their iPad going or put the TV on by themselves without waking you. He marks that as the end of toddlerhood. So I am well on the other side of this. I have 12, 15, and 17-year-olds. Yesterday, I was at the airport with them, and I was in Orlando, the Orlando airport, which if you want to do an anthropological study of toddlers, I mean, may I recommend the Orlando airport?
Yeah. Or if you're trying to convince, you know, your high schoolers to never reproduce, right, this would be a good place to visit.
It was a crowded Orlando airport. But the first thing I see when I walk in, you know, we have our bags and our bags.
Everyone's like over sugared and wearing mouse ears and like their eyes are rolled back in their heads.
Right, right, right. And I'm in the checking in for departure. This is people leaving Orlando.
Yeah, these are the sad people.
Right. They are like the leavings of their former selves standing in line to check bags.
Oh.
But this kid, the first thing I see when I walk in, was this kid, definitely a toddler, in that toddler range, and he was going like, and I could hear him first, just that, like kind of whining, carrying on, like, God, this kid has like stamina, like, what is he so upset about? And I don't really care, but you kind of eventually are like, what's going on? You look over, this kid, he fully had his hands in his pockets and was like looking around the airport sort of idly, just sort of marking time by going like, and I remembered that toddlers, like, they can stick to a bit like a Catskills comedian. You know what I mean? Like, he was committed.
Yeah.
I am unhappy about something. I don't remember what it is anymore. In fact, I'm fine now.
But I'm still acting out.
Right. But I'm going to do this like fire engine thing for another 5-10 minutes. Easy. I got all day.
And you said something, and Clint talks about this in the book, about there's a certain joyless determination. Like, there's a scene where his kid is stuffing toilet paper down the toilet and flushing it and like pushing it down with like a broom handle. And he walks in and he makes eye contact with her. And she just looks up like not afraid of him. And there's like no joy in her face. She's just with grim determination, like she's going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And you had a quote a long time ago that I think about all the time. In fact, my husband and I said it to each other like 2 days ago. It's kind of become a go-to quote for us. Like your kid, like pulling stuff out of the toy bin and just being like, these toys are not going to mess up themselves.
Right. This bookshelf is not going to dump itself out. I got to get to work.
Right. These books are not going to spread themselves over the playroom without my help.
Yes.
And I don't want to do it, but it's my job.
Right. There's no want to. Reason, not the need. I'm just going to have to do this. I always imagine these like 2-year-olds doing that, like as having hard hats and the metal lunchbox and like punching their card in, like in the old Bugs Bunny cartoons. Like, well, another day dumping out the toys.
I was recently with my 2-year-old nephew, and the other thing I remember about toddlerhood and I carry with me is this idea of like, that's my inner voice all the time. Like, I miss the days when people annoy you and you just could fall to the floor and just have a huge tantrum and beat your hands and fists and scream at the top of your lungs. Like, now when that happens to you, you have to be like, oh, thanks for that advice. That's so interesting. And then you're just feeling that on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And my toddler nephew at some point when I was with him was just sitting in a chair and screaming at the top of his lungs, want more cheese. And I was like, me too, buddy. Like, I wish I could just sit in the middle of a restaurant and scream, want more cheese at the top of my lungs. And people would like drop everything they were doing to ensure that I had some cheese.
Because he's going to commit. He is certain about one thing. He's able to really just like leave all else out. He's not multitasking. He wants more cheese.
What a life to just be able to just scream to get your needs met and then like laugh your head off at like Harry the Bunny and then just scream uncontrollably when you don't get your way. Like, I want to go back to that age. I feel like my inner self is a toddler still.
What I want to say about toddlers, having also done my over the holiday break sort of
toddler encounter,
watching my toddler relatives in action.
It's like dolphin encounter, but a really horrible version of it. It's toddler encounter.
Yes, exactly. It was toddler encountering. And you do, you know, experience it differently when you're outside it, right? Like the crying kid is not your problem. So you can just kind of watch it more impassively.
Yeah.
Another thing that toddlers do is this toddler had French toast, but I forget if it was too much syrup or not enough syrup. And really, it could have been either, right?
It could have been both.
Too much and not enough. Thanks, Mom.
It's a toddler.
This toddler was able to do, it reminded me of like an operatic singer, like warming up her voice and just sort of trying the different registers. This toddler was sort of musing, like, how upset am I about this? Like, he was doing that and sort of like trying different,
ramping up
different levels of how upset am I going to be? I have all day. I have so much available to me.
I have nothing to do. And these people,
nothing. I have so much energy to commit to this.
Yeah, they respond to my every need.
Right.
And let's just see how this goes. I'll try a couple different things.
Right.
No matter what happens, like even if I get less or more syrup, I'll just keep trying this voice.
Yeah.
When my daughter was, and it was a couple of years ago, she was definitely out of toddlerhood, but I came upon her and she was like, wah, wah, wah. I don't remember what she was doing, but she was making this sound. And I said, honey, what are you doing? And she looked at me just dead in the face and she went, oh, I'm making an annoying sound with my voice. And I was like, oh, that is exactly what you are doing. She wasn't pleased or displeased. She was just, that's what she was doing. And I think a lot of the toddler inner monologue is like, oh, I'm making an annoying sound with my voice. This will pass some time.
Can I read you a listener email that came in that I think is, it's for both of us, but I think you might have even more than me to say about this.
Please do.
This is an email from Leah. She says, even though my daughter is relatively tall and skinny, my just turned 2-year-old is the epitome of Margaret's short, fat dictator. Margaret, you used to have a blog called Short Fat Dictator.
Yes, that was the nickname that my dad gave my sister when she was a toddler. She was the Short Fat Dictator.
That's who we're talking about today. Okay, so this little girl is apparently, she's not a benevolent overlord, Leah says. She barks orders and commands at us all day long. She even bosses around my mother, who is basically the boss of the world. Whenever she wants something, she will repeat the demand, getting progressively louder and louder until that demand is met. So far, I'm like, right, toddler. Mm-hmm. Your question is.
Sounds right.
This child cannot simply request a yogurt. She must command it. Plus, her whims change so frequently that by the time you get her the yogurt, she's moved on to wanting a banana. I think some of this assertiveness is just baked in the cake, but how do I teach effective communication and patience to someone who has not yet mastered the art of the potty?
I mean, wait, I didn't know we were supposed to solve this. I'm not prepared. I got nothing.
I'm making no promises.
I used to ask my mom. My mom had 3 kids, each 12 months apart. So she had literally 3 toddlers.
That's how it rolls at your house, huh? Like lots of babies close together.
Yeah, it's a thing we do because we start late. So we got to hurry. And I would constantly ask her questions like, so, mom, how did you deal with it? You know, when one kid was biting the other's face and the baby was crying. And she's like, she would always say, I have no idea. I've blocked out that entire period of my life.
Yep.
I don't think about it. It's like it happened to someone else.
Yep.
It's like the way that like people come home from war and never discuss it again. That's how my mom was with having had 3 closely spaced toddlers. She was just like, don't ask me about it. I don't want to think about it. And I don't know anything because I've blocked it out. And let me just say, hashtag respect.
There's something about when it's your kid that it's more agitating, right? Like I can watch the toddler with the French toast syrup issue and be sort of bemused by it, right? Whereas the parent at whom it's directed feels that agitation. Like, how can you not? It's your DNA, I guess, yelling at you. But it's different when you're outside it. You can see it as like, that's what toddlers do. Like, that's how they are. And can you teach it out of them? Can you make a toddler less demanding and whiny and cranky? I think you can, like, you know, slowly put some parameters on the edges of it. But, you know, you can't make it not happen. That's how they are. What do you think?
Well, what I think is that the ultimate toddler rule, which my brother taught me early, which is not unique to him, is you don't negotiate with terrorists, right? Like, you don't actually try to have a reasonable conversation with them. You don't actually try to make what they're fussing about fixed. You know, you don't actually serve yogurt and then cheese and then pizza and then put them in the bath. And you don't actually give in to their demands because their demands are nonsense. And so if we're going to talk about actual, you know, rules, I would just say, don't negotiate. Like, it's cheese. And if they throw the cheese, dinner is over and they go somewhere else. Like, it's just, you blank face, when they punch you in the face, everything shuts down and you put them down and there's no more playing and fun. Like, you just kind of are the mom machine who's like, hey, we're having a good time. This is fun. And then when the behavior is out of bounds, the mom machine shuts down and nothing else fun happens. Like, that's how I actually tried to interact with my toddlers and take them out of places where they are making it worse for everyone.
Right. This kid in the airport yesterday.
Not possible on an airplane.
Yeah.
But yeah, if your toddler is screaming in Target over a toy, you leave your stuff and you walk out of Target. Like, you start to teach them a very fundamental lesson that bad behavior shuts down the fun machine.
I was on a city bus with my 2 little ones once, and my 2-year-old was just, I don't know what he was so upset about, right? But he had ramped up. It was just screaming. And I said, if you don't stop screaming, we are getting off this bus. And he was like, okay, like, come at me, and kept screaming. And now I've said that in front of other people on the bus. So we got off at the next stop, and then I had to walk home like 25 blocks with a screaming toddler. So I think the problem doesn't always work. It certainly doesn't work to shut them down. I was nice to the people on the bus.
Well, but this is what stinks about it, but it is like a good thing to remember. I was just with my grown nephews who are 25 and 23, let's say, something around those ages. Sorry, guys. And they were talking to their mom. So like, one's in graduate school, the other one has a job. Like, they're way out of this phase. And they were talking in still like hushed tones about the time that their mom put them out of the car and made them walk home. So they weren't toddlers, but they were literally like, we were so young, we weren't sure the direction home. But she said to them, like, if you don't stop fighting, I'm putting you out of the car. And she pulled the car over, and she wasn't far from home. And she obviously was like keeping an eye on them, but they were like, OMG, mom just put us out of the car and made us walk home. And they had to find their way home. And I think that's how you deal with toddlers.
That's how I miscalculated, because this kid was like, I'm either going to ride on my mother's lap on the bus or ride in the stroller while she pushes me home in the freezing rain. It wasn't really that different for him.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I bet, I mean, I think if you continue in that lane, it makes an impression overall, which is like,
yeah,
I can push my mom only so far before all the fun shuts down, and I don't like that feeling.
I think that's a good place to start. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Clint Edwards, the author of the new book, Silence is a Scary Sound.
Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby, who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed. Just slide on to apply, and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit, and they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician-recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. So today our guest is Clint Edwards. He is the author of the hilarious book Silence is a Scary Sound and other stories on living through the terrible twos and threes. He's a staff writer for Scary Mommy. He's a parenting contributor to the New York Times and the Washington Post. And he also manages the very popular No Idea What I'm Doing, a daddy blog. Welcome, Clint.
Hi, Clint.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You have three kids. Tell us how old they are.
Well, let me think about that.
Tough question. We start early with the really tough questions.
Yeah, this is. Am I at the doctor?
Next, we're going to do what are their names? We're really into tough questions.
Social security numbers and full names.
Social security. What's their birth dates? That's what they do to me at the doctor all the time. And then I just stand there.
You freeze. You panic. Deer in the headlights.
Yes, I have three kids. I have my oldest is Tristan, and he is 12. And then I have a daughter, Nora, who is 10. And then I have a 5-year-old little caboose named Aspen, who, if she were our first, she could have been our last.
It's amazing how that happens.
Oh, yeah.
I actually, my first one was the toughest, and I always think, like, I don't know what I was thinking doing this two more times.
I just feel like it was a bait and switch of some kind. Like, yeah, we're going to give this kid last. And we were done. Like, we were signed off. I was ready to retire the jersey. And then we decided to have one more. I mean, I love her, and she's given me a lot to write about.
So it's not all terrible. You're saying the twos and threes aren't all terrible.
No, I mean, they're not terrible. They're just like chaos, and you don't understand what is going on, and then suddenly they'll just melt your heart.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. It's this complete magic trick.
I do know how they do it. It's a biological imperative, my favorite topic. They make them cute so that you don't kick them out of the nest.
Well, that's exactly it, because there's a lot of times I just want to let the kid, when she was little, for part of this book, you know, twos and threes, I wanted to just let her live in the backyard with a water dish.
Yeah, that's frowned on. I mean, we're parenting experts, Clint, we can tell you.
Yeah, in America, it's frowned on, you know.
And that's right. In Finland or whatever, they just leave them outside all the time.
Yeah.
And it works out.
There's always that blog that's like, you know how we do it in Denmark.
Right, Denmark, whatever.
Yeah. We leave them in the barn. And you're like, huh, okay, I kind of want to move to Denmark.
Clint, who does she look like? Does Aspen look like you or your spouse?
I don't know. I mean,
because that's another thing that tugs at you. Like, oh, it's a little mini me.
I think all three of the kids, I'm optimistic that they take after my wife, because she's really pretty and I'm just this kind of like comic relief in the family. But I think she looks more like my wife, but she definitely has some of my facial features. And she's really tall for her age, which is terrifying, because you can't see me right now. But I'm not, like, if I could live in a tree and make fudge, like, that would make sense. I'm not a very big man.
You're a small fella.
I'm a little guy, and my wife is also just slightly shorter than me. And our two oldest kids are the shortest in the class. Like, they're the kids that have to stand on a box at the Christmas program.
And then this changeling came along, huh?
So, but Aspen is somehow like this giant baby.
Well, and it's a problem, because one of the few advantages one has over a toddler is size. Like, it's one of the only things going for you is that you're bigger than them.
It's true.
This is true. Not that that doesn't make them weigh any less when they go limp.
That's right. Suddenly, it's like, what is the physics that, like, when a toddler goes limp like a WTO protester, suddenly they weigh six times more?
It's the wet sand maneuver.
Well, what is the, have you seen Ant-Man?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great.
I have seen Ant-Man, and we had the Wasp on the podcast, Evangeline Lilly.
Oh,
that's right. We did. That's right.
This is brilliant. Okay, so this will work great. So, you know, Ant-Man, like, they get really small, but then they can still punch with the physics of, like, their full body weight, even though they're, like, the size of an ant.
Yes.
That's a toddler.
That's a toddler.
Right there.
There you go.
Like, they have the physics and the power to just knock you out.
And they will. I like when you talk in the rules section about, like, on the couch, one of the rules is, like, covering the important parts of your body. Like, they're coming for you.
Yep.
You lose an advantage. When you let them on the couch with you, you lose the spatial advantage of being higher than them.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a vasectomy, I'm sure it would have just happened naturally.
It would have been natural. Yeah, you could have probably skipped the copay on that one.
Clint, can I ask you about something that I think you bring up something in the book, and it's such a good point. The fresh hell that is having a toddler who's sick, but they haven't reached their second birthday yet. Can you talk about why that's so especially horrible?
Well, because doctors won't do anything. Like, it's terrible. Like, with our son, like, my wife was so worried that we were going to absentmindedly kill him, which is a valid fear when you have a new kid. Like, this is not unusual. I think a lot of people feel this way. But he just seemed to, like, go everywhere and come home with, like, a virus in his back pocket. And we would constantly take him to the doctor because she was worried that we were sick. And they would just kind of look at him and say, well, you know, if he was two, I would kind of open the heavens and give you all the medicine. But he's not two, so just get him to go to sleep, which is also impossible. And so it was nuts. And in the book, what happens in the book is I had this big argument because our son had this horrible virus and he was really, really sick. And we took, and she wanted to take him to the doctor. I'm like, we're not taking him to the doctor. Like, he's not going to do anything. Like, stop wasting all of our money. I mean, we were already paying off the birth, which was like a car loan. And then
this kid.
Yeah. And so we got in this big argument and I was going to pull the, like, I was still young in the marriage that, like, when we went to the doctor, finally, I relented. Well, I didn't relent. She just got in the car and drove and I jumped in. And I told her, like, you know, I was going to do the I told you so, you know, which is A really
ill advised.
If you're a new parent, a new father, I'm here. I told you so.
One thing, one takeaway.
Yeah, listen to me. That's a great way to sleep on the couch.
And while we're giving advice, I would say saying stop wasting all of our money to your wife when she's trying to take your kid to the doctor. Also, you know, we like to give advice on this podcast. I would say ill advised.
Ill advised. Okay. All right, good. I'm going to put that in my next book.
Yeah, take that one for free, guys.
So we go to the doctor, and he finally says, he's like 2 weeks or a month or something from his birthday. He says, you know, it's close enough. We'll give him something to help him not throw up. And my wife just was so relieved. And I realized that this had nothing to do with medicine or money. It didn't make any, none of it was made any sense to me. That she just wanted peace of mind. That was what she wanted. And I have never questioned taking our kids to the doctor's.
She wanted what we all want when we're parents of toddlers, the illusion of control. We want that too. But even antibiotics, by the way, are mostly an illusion of control. Like most things can't be, you know, viruses can't be solved with antibiotics, but we still want them because it gives us something to do. And Clint, you and I are both survivors of nursemaid's elbow. Can you talk about that a little bit for people who possibly have never dislocated a joint of one of their children?
Well, can I tell you something about my first introduction to nursemaid's elbow?
Sure.
Was The Shining. We've seen The Shining. And so like Jack, like the villain in the movie that like tries to murder his whole family.
The bad guy. Yeah.
When they establish him as a bad guy, it's he jerked his kid, his young kid, away from the papers and dislocated his elbow. That is nursemaid's elbow.
Yes.
So the first time that my kid, my son, whose elbow might as well have been like a foot in an untied shoe, you know, just wiggling around, I was holding his hand and he went limp because he tried to get to some sprinklers and it dislocated his elbow. And I'm like, great, I'm Jack from The Shining.
Okay, but did you go on to attack your family with an axe? No. So let's look at the positives.
Well, I mean, the essay stops after the...
That's true. We don't know.
You don't know. I'm just going to let...
I'm just assuming you probably stopped with the nursemaid's elbow. I want to say that I also dislocated my child's elbow and... Unlike you, who has the excuse that he just went limp, I was actually tugging him angrily away from his grandmother, who he was vexing. And so I actively caused it. It was not passive. And I took him to the hospital. They reset it. And it cost us who knows how many dollars, many dollars. And then I did it again a second time. And I want to say that I went on YouTube and I found a video and I put it back in myself. Following a YouTube video, and that is a true story.
Oh my gosh. Was it the same kid, same arm both times?
Same kid, same arm both times. Both times actively caused by me tugging him. It had nothing to do with going limp.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a little wonky now.
Well, I don't think, like, I had a post go viral on my blog, like, years ago, where I said that I put my youngest, Aspen, the wild child we discussed, who would literally be the child jumping in the gorilla cage at any time.
Right.
I put her on one of those little leash backpacks because I couldn't keep a hold of her.
No.
And everybody's like, just hold her arm. I'm like, well, she had the same problem as my son. Her arm would get dislocated.
You should just scream at those people. Haven't you ever seen The Shining? Thanks for your advice.
Can you imagine? If they had that, Jack Nicholson wouldn't have killed his family. It would have been fine.
Yeah. The movie would have been canceled if they had just had leash backpacks back in the day. He would have finished his book. This movie is called A Guy Who Finishes His Book.
Imagine how far he could have taken if they just taken that Swedish route and let that kid live in the backyard.
Would have all been fine if they were all just in Denmark. Amazing.
Clint, do you think you get more unsolicited advice as a dad out with a perpetual motion machine toddler than a mom would?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I think I get more praise.
We do too. We think so too.
You definitely get more praise.
And I don't understand that. I mean, I remember I was chatting with a friend of mine. I guess he's not a friend. He's my accountant.
He's my anime, actually.
He's a guy I know. And we had him over for dinner once. And he was telling me how he took his three children on a plane by himself, right? And when he got off, like people on the plane were like helping him and being kind to him. And then when he got off the plane, they clapped. Not like a, you're getting off the plane, thank goodness, like I've seen in the past. It was more of a good, like, we're so proud of you.
Gosh, yep.
Right. You handled a child by yourself for 3 hours, Dad.
That is insane. Like, walk around the airport.
It is time to make a trophy.
Yeah.
Look at the moms, like saddled with bags, like they're Sherpas heading up the side of a mountain, you know, like a dozen kids. And then parents just look at them like, oh, crap, mom's coming on.
So maybe we do have it worse.
Yeah. And everyone's just looking at them like, ugh. She doesn't have it together. Let me go give her some unsolicited advice.
I mean, I do get unsolicited advice for sure, and it drives me insane. But I don't think I get quite the criticism as mothers. I think most people, for the whole, like if I'm at the grocery store alone, they just kind of give me that like smile. Yeah, like, you're doing it, Dad. And it's like,
thanks for the back, Pat.
Okay, like let's...
Been doing it. So that's unsolicited advice. We try here on the What Fresh Hell podcast to give our listeners some real advice. What's some advice you have for parents who are like just entering the fresh hell? Like they've got a adorable 12-month-old, maybe an 18-month-old who's just starting to say some words. It's all cute. Like, what do you got for them?
Like, that's it. That's the whole premise of the book is you're failing. And that's okay. There is no, like, I don't care what your race, your religion, your socioeconomic status, wherever you are, if you have a toddler, you're failing. And you need to accept that at the core of everything that you are and who you are, that there, the path to success is minimal, if at all. And as long as you just, you love them and you try and keep them alive and just accept that there is no winning.
This is what used to, the unsolicited advice that used to break me when I had closely spaced toddlers, and you'd be in the Target and one's gone limp and the other one's screaming and the baby's missing and you're just losing it completely. And then someone walks up to you and they're like, just wait, it only gets harder. Little people, little problems, mom. And I'm like, let me just say that's a total lie. Little people, horrible problems. Big people, still some problems. But for me, getting out of that like multiple toddler phase, I just feel like we have to tell people it gets better.
This is the thing with kids, at least as far as I understand it, is that like every time you think you've figured it out and you've solved the problem, the next problem like just kind of rises. It's kind of like chasing like some sort of a guerrilla terrorist group around and you think, okay, we solved the problem with them blowing up the bridges, and then it's like, surprise, loser, you know, we've drilled holes and we're jumping out of the bushes at you now. I just don't, like my son, like as soon as he figured out how to take a shower, he started to refuse to take a shower just on the fact that he just doesn't understand hygiene.
I will agree that it is an amorphous goal to be like, I'm good at this now and it's going great. Like, I would not make that your goal. But I just, if someone needed to tell me when I had, you know, a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old and an infant, like, this is really bad and it's going to be better than this someday, in that the constancy of toddlers.
It's the constancy. It's the incessant, like you can't even take a deep breath thing, I think is hard.
I mean, my kids are now out of the house 8 hours a day. Like, that's just a different world.
Right.
Yes, do they come home with their own annoying problems? They do. But it's not that constant terror. We just had a 3-year-old in the house, and I was like, oh my God, that's right. Like, every second is like, don't lick that. Don't break that. Don't shove yourself over that bridge. Like, it's just that constant, unstoppable terror and, like, constant involvement with someone else's bodily functions. That part ends and it's, there's peace over here, guys.
At I'm some point, you. They can wipe their own butt.
They can wipe their own butt, and every time, and you will no longer be able to pull their arm out of the socket, no matter how hard you try.
This is true. This is all very, very accurate. So yes, there is hope once they can turn on the TV again and get the cereal.
Clint, please tell us about where we can find you and your book and everything you do.
Well, okay, so, you know, I have a blog. I think it's byclintedwards.com, something like that. But no one really goes to the blog anymore. Most people follow me on Facebook at No Idea What I'm Doing, a Daddy Blog. And on Instagram, where everyone is illiterate, you can find me there at No Idea Daddy Blog. I'm on Twitter somewhere, by Clint. And my books are, they're in Barnes & Noble and they're on Amazon and anywhere where good books are sold. So if you go somewhere and they don't have my book, that's a bad bookstore and you shouldn't go there anymore.
And like a toddler, you should fall to the ground, bang your fists and scream loudly until they bring the book to you.
Yes.
All right. I support that choice.
Good to know. All right. Clint Edwards' new book is Silence is a Scary Sound and Other Stories on Living Through the Terrible Twos and Threes. Clint, thank you for talking to us today.
Thanks, Clint.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Margaret, I've been at the research again. I'm looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improving energy levels, getting better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, friends, that lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different foods on your body, Lumen is a cool way to see what's really happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $50 off your Lumen.
That is LUMEN.ME. And the code FRESH at checkout for $50 off. Thanks, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
Many of us have hair that is shedding more freely than we would like it to. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And let's be honest, some of us, I'm pointing to myself, have all of these reasons. But whatever the cause of hair shedding might be, Nutrafol's Hair Health Quiz is a great place to start.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Nutrafol's 3-minute quiz analyzes all the factors that affect hair growth. Then they create a customized hair health plan that is unique as you are.
Start your hair growth journey today by taking Nutrafol's hair wellness quiz and get your personalized hair health plan today. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping at Nutrafol.com/quiz when you enter the promo code LAUGHING.
Let me just add that Mother's Day is approaching, and if you've had your eye on Nutrafol but you weren't sure if you should go for it, you definitely should. And if you need to leave a hint out for the gifting elves in your house, or maybe they're listening right now, I'm going to spell it for them. Nutrafol.com. That's spelled Nutrafol.com/quiz. Then use the promo code LAUGHING to get free shipping and $10 off the first month.
Amy and I are customers. That's Nutrafol.com/quiz, promo code LAUGHING. And now, an all-new list of things that are making your toddler angry today.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
It's 4 a.m. and she really wants to watch Harry the Bunny, but you won't let her.
He didn't want his toast toasted.
These aren't the right socks. They are way too socky.
It's cold outside. Why did you make it so cold outside?
Is not allowed to do loud, realistic T-Rex scream during church service.
Wants to wear a bathing suit to Grandma's birthday party.
The dog is looking at her.
She doesn't want to be held.
No, she doesn't want to walk either.
And she definitely does not want the stroller. No.
He doesn't want his name to be Michael anymore.
He smashed his truck against the wall, and now it's broken.
The water in the bathtub is making her wet.
Wants to go to the beach, even though it's January.
You have cut the strawberry all wrong.
Her pet fish is cheating at the game she invented.
Why can't the house be blue? She doesn't want to live in a yellow house anymore.
This has been an all-new list of things that are making your toddler angry today.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast. Oh, Amy, toddlers.
It's a thing. And because it's a long phase, you will often, you, I, lots of parents out there are going to have two of them at once.
Yes.
And two toddlers is a special thing.
Yes. Or you're going to go through this phase, like Clint, with like several kids, and you're going to like find many of the same problems. But with each toddler, we've learned it's a fresh hell.
What fresh hell is toddlers?
Every fresh hell. Like you just, the one thing about toddlers, you can talk to a lot of people about their toddlers. And like Clint has a lot of stories. They're all like funny. Some of them are illuminating. But like they're all like, oh yeah, that. But they're all also different. That's the trick of toddlers. They'll always come up with something new.
My friend has a three-year-old and one-year-old, and this made me think of when you were talking about peeking through the living room of your former existence and getting like the heebie-jeebies from it.
Into that old hell, yeah.
I'm going to give you
stale
a phrase
hell.
That will strike terror into your heart. Hand, foot, and mouth disease. They have just moved to a new state. They're starting new lives. Her three-year-old started a new preschool, and I mean like, day two comes home with the blisters on his hands, hand, foot, and mouth disease, and he can't go to his new school for like 10 days.
Have you gotten it yourself? I got it when my toddlers got it.
I don't think I ever had it. So I guess that means if you have to think about whether you've had it, then you haven't had it. Right.
Oh, no. That means you didn't have it. Because let me tell you, two toddlers, this is why the old house. And it really was so shocking. Like I walked up and it was like this, like my mother before me, I have blocked out a lot of the terror. And then I walked up to the house and it was like, you know, like how in movies, like in Star Wars movies, it's like they go back to like the scene of something terrible and like the voices start playing and rising and it's like they're haunted. That's how I was standing in front of that house. And definitely one of those images was me with like a mouthful of blisters, like taking care of two miserable toddlers. I mean, not good times, guys.
The chief memory I have of that is that my three-year-old who had it, he loved his pacifier. Okay, I guess he was still two because when he turned three, we gave the pacifiers away, but he was still very devoted to his pacifier at the time. But you couldn't suck on it because it hurt the sores inside your mouth. And so like there was just nothing to be done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was not good.
Oh, and let me tell you, this is what I will say for people heading into it or in it right now. Every story you tell, like when you just said that thing about the pacifiers and hand, foot, and mouth disease, I literally went, oh, right. That was hellacious as well. Like, but I will say from a distance, like it gets better and the memories fade, you know? Like I, back in the day, was a runner and I ran two or three marathons. And at the end of my first marathon, the last like whatever, 4 miles, I was in agony. I was so miserable. And I kept thinking, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. I will never, ever do this again. This is horrible. And then, of course, 6 months later, I was like, that was great. We should do it again. And then at the last 4 miles of the second marathon, I was like, how could I have forgotten the terror of it? Why am I doing this? I swore I would never do it. And this is why this is awful. And that's kind of like having children. They hit toddlerhood and you're like, oh, right, this horrible thing. And then like 6 months later, the memory fades and you're like, we should have another kid.
Right. That was fun. Remember Christmas morning? Right. It's all wonderful.
Yeah. You only picture the good stuff. We've talked about it on the podcast before that there's like been studies the way the brain is wired. Like literally you only remember the good stuff. And let me tell you, a good example of that is that people have more children.
Is toddlerhood. And of course, toddlers' brains, the way they work, right? I mean, they don't have any sort of perspective or time. At least when you as an adult have hand, foot, and mouth disease, you think, well, this, it sucks. It's terrible. This isn't how it is now, right? Like, this is going to last a couple of days, a week. I remember life before this and life after this. But the toddler having this is like, this is how it is now. Why are you letting this happen, Mom? Like, my mouth hurts and they have no, you can't sort of reason with them. It'll all be better. That the toast will come out of the toaster and it's going to be fine. They live very much in the moment and can't really see any sort of reality other than the moment's reality.
And they can't really express stuff. Like, I was thinking about this. I have a tween and we were talking about heading back to school after a vacation. And he was like, well, I'm nervous about this and I'm worried about this and what if this? And I remember going back before involving a lot of drama and I was like, oh, he is starting to be able to express, I am worried. And so we're not having as many just random outbursts that drive me crazy. And it was a very comforting thought to me, like, oh, this is a nice phase. Like, he's saying what's worrying him instead of just like slamming his door and being rude to everybody. And it's like, think about that as a toddler. Like, they can't express anything, you know? And so language development, one thing I will say, know your developmental stages. Because I think sometimes like people get really hung up with toddlers of like, okay, we're going to have good manners. We're going to say please and thank you. Okay, now I'm going to talk to you about why what you did was wrong. And I think there's some wasted energy that you're in the wrong developmental stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you use the model of like fun is on when you behave correctly. Fun is off when you behave incorrectly. It's like that's kind of the only guidepost that a toddler can understand. And so I think some of the frustration is like pouring a lot of energy into like, let's talk about why taking someone else's train is a poor choice. Like, you're kind of on the wrong track there to me.
And they're going to be stuck on, but I want the train. Like, they're very stuck on that. And you probably aren't going to be able to teach them about sharing and understanding. What's it called? Theory of mind, when they're able to see.
They don't have it.
They don't have theory of mind, where they understand that that kid wants the truck just as much as I do. Like, does not compute. And so
it's more like dealing with a puppy. Like, you don't sit down with a puppy and be like, you chewed the couch. I paid a lot of money for that couch and it hurt my feelings that you disrespected it. Like, you're dealing with a puppy and you're dealing with a toddler in the same way. Like, a lecture about why drawing on the couch is wrong with a 2 and 3 year old is not going to work.
You know, I love to think about the ways I can use what I know about dogs and apply them to kids.
Oh, it's basically like this whole podcast should be called Your Kid Is a Dog.
I am going to get my friend, the dog trainer, to come on and talk to us about this stuff because I've learned a lot from her. But, you know, dogs live in the moment. So, for example, if your dog, you know, poops in the house and you come home and find it a couple hours later, you, even if you go with the dog to the scene of the crime and say, do you see this? Do you understand? Do you understand? They're like, just sort of like, mommy mad, mommy yell. Like, they don't even know that's their poop. Like, where are we talking about this? They are completely in the moment. And I think that's what you're saying about the toddler, that they can't understand anything other than the moment and the now. So it's a lot of wasted energy.
And they have a biological imperative to get their needs met.
Sure.
You know, I love a biological imperative. So like a toddler's overarching biology is get my needs met. And like that high-pitched squeal, it's a biological imperative because like if toddlers historically weren't making a really annoying noise, you might not feed them, you know? And so
right,
having like, well, let's talk about how we're behaving. Just feed them or shut down. But like, there's not a lot of room in between to like have conversations about. And, you know, this is an attachment parenting thing, that thing of like, I don't make my kids say please and thank you, which I was always like, oh, hippie is weird, you know, but having read a little bit about it, it is like, you're pretty much teaching a dog to do a trick. You know, they don't have a sense of being grateful.
I want to talk a little bit about like when your toddler is doing something you don't want them to do, and you say, hey, like, stop, you know, get off the couch, whatever. And they don't. And then maybe you have to come over and like lift them off the couch and they kick and scream. And like, I see parents now that I'm well out of that stage, I see parents immediately try to fix that. Like, the kid has to get off the couch. They don't want to. And then you immediately have to negotiate about why they should want to. Or like, okay, you can be on the couch. We have to take your shoes off. Okay, you can be on the couch with your shoes on, but let's get your, you know, Lightning McQueen towel. Okay, you can be on the couch with your shoes on and without the Lightning McQueen towel. And I just think like, get off the couch. Like, it's okay to stick to it. It doesn't matter if your kid likes it. It doesn't matter if they kick and scream.
Yeah, this is don't negotiate.
Yeah.
And this takes me back to my, what I've always identified as the best piece of parenting advice I've ever received. Saying no means standing up. And it is 100% true with toddlers.
100% true.
I mean, it is the formative, most top of the triangle rule with toddlers. If a toddler is doing something you don't want them to do, you cannot fix it from the couch. You cannot fix it from a seated position. Like, when a toddler is standing on the couch, which toddlers will do with their shoes on, and you don't want them standing on the couch, or you're at grandma's house and they have shoes on and that's the new couch.
Right. And they have different rules. Right.
You stand up, you take them off the couch, and you say, no couch. And then if they do it again, you take them and you remove them from the situation. Like, there is no like, come on, I told you, off the couch because I'm eating dinner. Like, if you want to eat dinner, you have to let them walk on the couch because you don't want to remove them, which I made that choice a ton. I was like, oh, no walking on the couch. And let me tell you, 10 ruined dinners later, I was like, I'm going to let them do whatever they want. Our couch became a jungle gym because I didn't have the energy to get them off of it.
Right.
But I did know that trying to eat dinner and scream at them to get off the couch was not a good use of any of our times.
Or even scream, but I'm not even saying scream. I'm saying like, okay, you know what the rule is. And you like try to make it like something they want to do.
Oh, no, no, no. That's a fool's game.
It realize it's in their best interest.
No, that's a path to despair, guys. Don't do that.
Yeah. So be like the lady in the airport I saw who kid was, I will never forget the look on this kid's face. He looked like he was like whistling on his way to the fishing hole, but he was making this like noise. And she just was repacking a suitcase or some hellish task she had at hand. And she was ignoring. I mean, he wasn't hurting anybody. We went on the airplane. He was in the middle of the like check-in area where there's plenty of sounds and smells already. And she ignored him.
Oh, is that another big one with toddlers? Pick your battles.
Yeah.
Like, do you want a toddler? Don't you have an expression that's like acting their age or something? It's like,
yeah,
a toddler makes annoying noises, makes messes, is a gross eater, is demanding. Like, if you pick every battle with a toddler, you will go insane. Period. Mm-hmm. End of story. Like, if you're, and this is something, my husband is kind of an ordered, he's very disordered in many ways, but he's ordered in many ways. And this is like something that we had to work out together. I'm saying that this is something I had to yell at him about until he stopped doing. But my overarching conversation with my husband at this age was like, why are you saying no to that? Watch your nose. Like, he just had a tendency to be like, stop doing that. Okay, cut that out. Okay, stop that. And I'm like, this is behavior that is totally age appropriate. It's not upsetting anyone else. Like, why are you stopping him from, I don't know, smashing trucks together or whatever in the playroom? Like, that's not how we treat trucks. Really? I just would not pick every single battle because you're going to make your life a nightmare. And watch that the bad behavior, let me tell you, the next behavior is not necessarily going to be an improvement. Like, he's smashing trucks together. It's not really hurting anyone. The trucks are pretty sturdy. He doesn't really understand that we paid a certain amount of money for those trucks. You stop him from doing that, the next behavior may be ripping up the couch cushions. Like, I'm going to stick with what I know here.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes a toddler's combinations of activities are completely unexpected. I just saw this on Instagram and I thought it was a great hint. If I can find it, I'll repost it so you all can see it, but I'll just tell you what it was. Bathtub Legos. She was like, do you have a cranky toddler? Do you have a long day? Put him in the bathtub, dump the Legos in. And this was the perfect example of the kid did it. And she's like, whoa, 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 Legos don't go in the bathtub. Well, why the heck not? Like, they float. She's like, they haven't gotten moldy. Now we have our special bin of Legos that go in the bathtub. And this cranky kid got like a good 90 minutes of just playing with the Legos as they floated in the bathtub. So you can.
That is the perfect example of what I'm talking about, because smashing trucks, like, okay, maybe you don't want them to do that.
Right? Like, they're not supposed to go.
Bathtub Legos is a really good example of what I'm talking about. Why are you saying no to that? Like, actually, it's fine.
Right.
And it's hard. You get used to saying no, but like, watch your no. And I'm going to finish with my biggest savior, which is on a tangent from that. Mm-hmm. Take a 2-hour bath. It's fine. Some nights I would just be like, the only time the kids, all three of my kids were happy, were in the bath. And I had three kids in the bath together, often for an hour and 15 minutes at night.
Yeah, you never move a happy toddler. That's my big rule, right? If they're happy in the bathtub, why would you take them out?
That is the biggest rule. If they're mm-hmm. happy, let them be. And that is another thing, like when the family's gathered around, we had the 2-year-old with us, and it's like, everyone's kind of like, oh, let me show you this. It's like, wait a minute, that kid is quietly turning pages in a book. Like, why would you try to introduce a fire truck at this point? Like,
yep.
Don't interrupt a happy toddler to make them more happy, because let me tell you, spoiler alert, that's not how it goes. Oh my gosh, guys, we could talk about toddlers. We could do a 76-hour long podcast. Do you know the Guinness World Record for longest podcast? I don't.
On toddlers.
But we could do that on toddlers, because we could talk about it forever. But if you're in it, God bless you. It gets better. And if you're out of it, congratulations, you survived.
We want to hear about how it's going with your toddlers. There's a lot of ways you can tell us. You can tell us on Facebook. We're at What Fresh Hellcast on Facebook. You can join our page and our group where listeners can talk to each other about all kinds of stuff. And they do. There were all kinds of questions popping last night.
Fantastic. We're also on Twitter at WFH Podcast. And you can always come to our website, whatfreshhellpodcast.com, and check out all the links and resources from the show.
Oh, and Instagram at What Fresh Hellcast. Check out the bathtub Legos on there.
And thanks so much to our guest, Clint Edwards. His book is called Silence is a Scary Sound, and you can get it wherever books are sold.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors. And somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.